Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Relationships That Work, the Power of Conscious Living Show, an adventure in self-realization and conscious living. This is a place and time for spiritually based transformation through empowered communication, courageous introspection, and purposeful action. Integrate ancient wisdom into your daily life and relationships. Let's join our host, Dr. David Wolf.
Welcome to the Sofitove Institute Radio Hour. This is your host, David Wolf, here in the Sofitove Studios in Alachua, Florida, with Marie Glashine at the controls. Welcome to the Sofitove Institute Radio Hour. We want you to join us. We want you to join us today and call in. Number to call, 805-285-9749. If you call in, you want to be on the show, press 1 or write to us on the Blog Talk Radio chat. Also, you can call in on Skype. You can call Marie on her Skype address. That's marie.glashine. Call in, get some on-the-spot, live, life-changing coaching, here on the Sofitove Institute Radio Hour. Sofitove Institute Radio Hour. Well, we'd love to hear from you today, hear your perspectives, hear what's happening for you. So, Marie, we in this field, spiritual growth, self-realization, self-development, personal growth, a lot of times we're working, we're talking with people, and the issues that come up are around like a lot of blocked emotion, blocked feelings, a lot of our processing and facilitation is about unblocking and expressing feelings and emotions more. And that's why I find that whether it's clients or just people in the different environments that I'm in, sometimes they seem perplexed or maybe even unsettled when I say that I think that people should express emotions less. Now, you Marie, you've been working closely with me for like more than a decade. So I don't think you're too surprised when you hear me say, I think people should express emotions less. But many people are, considering the field of service that I'm in. Now, actually, it's not about less or more. That's the real point. But there can be a stereotype. There can be a stereotype about, oh, yes, you should express your feelings more. So, based on my experience, there are definitely some people who would be real healthy for them to express their feelings more. And there are definitely some people who would be real good if they express their feelings less. It's about, the principle is about choice. The principle is about being at choice. About being at choice. Right? And so that out of choice and inspiration and conscious deliberation, we're making decisions about, I'm going to express this sadness. I'm going to keep it to myself. I'm going to express this anger. I'm going to keep it to myself. To be conscious of what's gone on, to be conscious living, and to be conscious of what I'm experiencing, and to be capable and willing to experience that experience. And when I choose to communicate whatever part of my experience. I want to communicate in such a way that people get it. To experience my experience, communicate in a way that people get it. Being a choice, awareness. Using our conscious discretion. Using our conscious discretion, yes. Here's something I choose to express, here's something I choose not to express. That's different. That's different than I couldn't express if I wanted to because I'm too numb to it. I'm not even aware of what's going on inside me. Or that's different than reactively becoming whatever, becoming sad, confused, enraged, where I'm not a choice. My emotions are swinging me around. My emotions are tossing me around. And they come out. They come out when it's not really for anyone's benefit, myself included. They come out in ways that aren't really constructive or productive or helpful. They could be damaging. They could be destructive. But they're controlling me. So being a choice means it doesn't mean that I can't get to my emotions when I want to, and it doesn't mean that they come out in ways that I don't want them to. So being a choice about emotions, feelings, thoughts, expressions. You're listening to the Sofitov Radio Hour. We encourage you, we invite you, call in. Call on the phone, 805-285-9749, or on Skype. If you call in, you want to be on the show, press 1. By calling in, you get transformative communication coaching right here on the spot. Call in or write in on the Blog Talk Radio chat. It's about responsible choice about emotion. I was in communication with someone recently, and he described a scenario in his life. And then he asked me, so what's wrong with expressing emotion? And of course, I wasn't there firsthand at the scenario, but I said, based on what you told me, that it seems like that the way you expressed yourself had very little to do with honest communication of emotion or thought or perspective. That it sounded like it was irresponsible, destructive, even damaging expression. And then to avoid looking at that, I can just go, well, I was just expressing my feelings. Isn't that what we're supposed to do? Well, no, not necessarily. Depends how we do it. You're listening to Sofitov Radio Hour, your station for self-realization. We invite you to call in. We'll be very glad for you to participate in the show today. We're talking about being at choice, being a master of our senses, mind, and emotions. Master doesn't mean we're so scared that we can't get to our emotions, connect with them, and express them when we want. And a master doesn't mean that we lose our temper, our different feelings come out in ways that are not under our control. It means that at any moment, mastery means that at any moment, I can connect with whatever I want and express it with the intensity I want, in the direction I want, using the words that I choose. You're listening to the Sofitov Radio Hour. Sofitov Radio Hour. Choice, sometimes choice and emotions, it can seem contradictory. Like if we say something like, depression is a choice, or anxiety is a choice, we get reaction to that. A choice, why, how can you say it's a choice? I'm just that way, I'm just feeling that way. And we recognize, we acknowledge, and this might not be about consciously choosing to have anxiety that makes us sick or depression that keeps us down and dysfunctional, or to be confused and bewildered for months and years. Might not seem like a conscious choice. We'll say, though, that it's our stance is that it's a healthy perspective to view ourselves as the source of my experience, whether it's joy, appreciation, gratitude, depression. Right? Because if the source is something out there, no, I'm just depressed because of the way she talked to me. Don't you understand? I'm just depressed because I didn't get that job. No, I'm just irritable and angry because life just never goes my way. I'm just confused because it's a hard decision. Okay, then maybe when life gets better and when he changes, then you'll be happy. Okay, let's hope it comes soon. So it's a very disempowering position. Whereas the position that I'm the creator of my, whether I'm conscious of it or not, to at least hypothetically accept, I'm the creator of my experience. Then it's like, okay, I created this with all of its fulfillment and agony and all of the mixture there. I created this. All right. Where do I need to go? What are the possibilities to change this experience? You're listening to the Sofitov Radio Hour. This is David Wolf, your host. We invite you to call in and share your perspective. Get some coaching. You and the Sofitov Radio Hour.
One of the topics you guys were sharing me was saying that how we were so used to being feeling good.
All these term like calamities, that's a judgment. Oh, this is a calamity. It could be the same event, and it's like, hey, what an opportunity here. That has that has a judgmental connotation, a term like that. And so what I'm hearing from you, Marie, is that to the extent that we're in this process of conscious living, to the extent that we're in this process of self-realization, then everything's auspicious. We were talking about that last night, this attitude of gratitude, not in a superficial or a shallow way, but this attitude of gratitude, cultivating this spirit where whatever happens, I'm truly grateful. I'm truly grateful for this opportunity, for my continued self-realization and spiritual advancement, whatever happens, whatever might happen. And this means like this place of giving 100% to our life, giving full effort to our life, simultaneously with full detachment from the result, because we know it's not any external result that's going to give me fulfillment. At the same time, if I'm withholding from my life, I'll just try to go through the motions, then I'm dooming myself to no possibility for profound fulfillment. So giving fully, giving 100% in this process of self-realization, in my service, in my life-enriching endeavor for myself and others, giving 100% without attachment to result, without emotional attachment to result. It could be a tricky balance.
Why will I do that? Why will I want to give 100% of myself if there is nothing to get out of it? That doesn't make sense, what you're saying, David.
Yeah, in that book, the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, he guides Arjuna. He says, yes, you have a right to do your endeavor, in a sense, to do your work, and you have no right to enjoy the results. So it seems like Krishna got it all backwards. He got it all backwards. Because, say, in material life, we tend to, it's like, I wish I didn't have to work, and then I could just enjoy all day. And so, actually, spiritual life is the opposite. We get to give full endeavor. We get to give full endeavor. Of course, not necessarily work, as Confucius said, if you love what you do, you'll never have to work. If you love what you do, you'll never have to work. So we get to give full endeavor from our spiritual core, fully inspired, with detachment from the results. And why would I want to do that? Because I understand that no external results are going to be the intrinsic source of my happiness. What do we have, Marie?
David, we have a caller. The caller, IR code is 908. Caller, you're online. You can state your name and where you're calling from. Hello?
Hi, it's Marina. Hello.
Marina.
Hello, Marina.
I have so many devil's advocate questions to pose on this topic. Especially
devil's advocate, go for it. Okay, go for it, Marina.
Wonderful.
So, regarding catastrophe, I learned when I was in Israel that the War of Independence, which for Israelis was a triumph, for the Arab Palestinians was a catastrophe, and they used Nakba to refer to the War of Independence. So, I would love to see you have this... this kind of discussion with the Palestinians in the room, you know, for them to not be attached to results and all that, because especially, you know, with regards to Israel, I met a girl who's working with Palestinian youth in Jordan, and she said that she refers to Israel as occupied Palestine. And if she,
right.
If she said anything else that, you know, she would be suspect. So
Yes.
It's a whole, yes. It's like they're living on one side of the fence and then the Israelis are on the other side of the fence, but they're looking at the same fence. They're just talking about it in two different languages.
Yes, there's that, we'll call it a dualistic conception. and a dualistic conception, and that's kind of the material world, the material consciousness. This is good, this is bad, and then again, and I spent about 8 years in the Middle East, and I also interacted extensively with Palestinian youth and Palestinian grandmothers and grandfathers and Jewish lawyers from Tel Aviv, and I was living in Druze villages and Arab Christian villages and with the Arab Muslims, and I'm familiar with there. Now, in one sense, for me, this conversation has nothing to do with Palestinians, Israelis, Arabs, Jews, because we could apply the same principles to what's happening in your life today, Maureen, or what's happening in my life, or what's happening between the Florida Gators and the Florida State Seminoles. To the extent that we cultivate spiritual consciousness, and in my time in Israel, my endeavor, with whatever success I had or didn't have, my endeavor was to give spiritual consciousness. To the extent that we cultivate spiritual consciousness, we rise above this duality. We rise above this duality. What happened in 1948, it was good. It was a triumph. No, it was a catastrophe. It was a disaster. Okay, that's duality. And we're looking at, from the spiritual platform, how do we respond to the duality? And just to bring it maybe to a less volatile scenario, let's think about ice cream. So if you stay with me here, Marina, that, you know, let's say it's a hot day, and I just jogged 5 miles on it's a 95 degree day in Florida, and then after the jog, Marie hands me an ice cream cone. So is the ice cream good or bad? Oh, it's very good. Oh, ice cream, it's very good. It's very good. Okay, and then after I finish that ice cream, Marie hands me another ice cream. Yeah, whew, yeah, really, it's so cooling. Now let's say after the second one, she hands me the third ice cream. And I'm like, I guess I can do it. I do, yeah, I was kind of hungry and hot. Okay, now let's say the fourth one, it's like, this ice cream is bad. The fifth one, it's like, this is real bad. You might have to pay me a lot of money. But wait a second. The ice cream is the ice cream. The ice cream is the ice cream. But because my senses were so attracted to it, it's good. But then by the fifth one, my senses were repulsed by it. It's bad. So this is that, hey, when the fence is here, my senses or my extended senses, extended, because there's the immediate senses, means, you know, my sense of taste and touch and seeing. And then there's extended senses, like my family and my community, okay? But it's still all about me in the center. And so when my extended senses are satisfied because we won the football game or the fence is here, then it's like, this is good. It was a good event. And when my senses are repulsed, that my immediate senses or my family, my community, that they are suffering, then this is bad. And so spiritual platform means it's not about me in a limited or an extended sense. It's not about me. Yata Tarur Mulani Shechanina. It means we're dedicated to watering the root of the tree, the source of all spirit, so that all the branches and leaves are nourished, whether the branches and leaves are designated as Russians, Americans, black, white, women, men, Arab, Jews. I remember when I was in Israel, sometimes, Marina, when I was in Israel, this is 20 plus years ago, and I would say, sometimes I'd be talking to an Israeli, and I'd say that, let's say someone has a lot of money, and he gives that money to help He gives that money to open a hospital. Would that be a good thing? Yeah, that would be a good thing. He's not right, not using it for like drugs or something. He gives the money to open a hospital. Okay, all right. That would be a good thing. And then I say, now let's say that that hospital is in downtown Damascus, and the hospital is especially dedicated to healing terrorists so they can get back on the job. Is it still a good thing? No, that wouldn't be a good thing. Well, wait a second, you said. Yeah, because hospital, we think of healing. Okay, so that will be good. That will be appealing to the senses. Oh, but if it's someone who is going to destroy me and my family, well, that would be repulsive to the senses. So we want to rise above this platform of consciousness that's evaluating, discriminating based on whether it's attractive or not attractive to my senses. We want, without rising above that, this tension, conflict, wars, hostilities based on this duality is always going to be there.
David,
what do you think,
Marina? Okay. So,
about the ice cream. Okay, yeah. Good. That was my favorite part there.
From an objective standpoint, not a subjective sense-based standpoint, the ice cream wasn't good to begin with, whether the taste buds like it or not. It's not good for the body. What's inside it doesn't do anything to support the body's function, especially when it's dehydrated. So, like, you're talking about the senses, and that's true. We can't rely on the senses to make our choices because they're very subjective, but when you're coming from a more objective standpoint, to have something objective to measure your choice against, then that's a different story. And like with the hospital scenario, like I wouldn't, in the case of this person you were speaking to, I wouldn't even answer the question until I heard the whole story, because you're only getting part of the information. A hospital isn't always good. You know, it may be good just in societal opinion, but many hospitals have been the sites of where people have died, where surgeries were performed that shouldn't have been performed, where nurses and doctors neglected their patients. So, you know, to this Israeli, he thinks of hospital as good, but, you know, someone else might think of it as not so good. So, it's important to hear all the pros and cons and where are you building it and for who and for what purpose and all that. So it's like...
Exactly. And so there might be some who see the presence of the IDF in certain villages as very terrible, and others who see the presence of the IDF in certain villages as quite healthy and responsible, based on different sense perceptions, different perceptions of the mind and the senses. And yeah, just like so for me, my senses may have been very attracted to the ice cream. Someone else maybe not. So it's the same principle. And so where we're going with this, Marina, is like let's learn how to rise above the sentimental platform. Sentimental means based on the senses and the mind. The functions of the senses are to be attracted and repulsed. The function of the mind is to accept or reject. So to rise above that platform and even rise above the intellectual platform to the genuinely spiritual platform where we learn how to water the root of the tree. That, okay, here's an activity. Maybe it's pleasing to my senses, maybe not. My criteria for evaluation, is this really going to water the root? Meaning that, is it going to be a win-win for everyone? Because if I water the root of the tree, we could translate that to serving God, serving the divine, not just in lip service, but genuinely. If I'm watering the root of the tree, then all the branches and all the leaves will be satisfied. And what we endeavor to do in Safer Tov Institute is to cultivate and share and educate about that science of how to water the root of the tree.
Thank you, David. I also wanted to talk about what you said before about depression.
Yes.
Two questions, because I just had my first class in psychopathology yesterday, the semester started, and we talked all about different, you know, DSM diagnoses.
Okay, yeah, good.
Does coming from choice really apply for what they call more severe psychological problems like schizophrenia or schizoaffective disorder or bipolar, you know, or multiple personality or split personality? Are they really coming from choice?
What do you think, Marina? What's your point of view?
My point of view is that it's not so simple. The person isn't always coming from choice. There's, you know, there may be biological challenges that they're dealing with that even if with all their intention they want to be different or think different or act different, their genetics make it difficult to do so.
There's biology, there's genetic, there's no question about that. And the biology and the genetics, that affects the consciousness. And I want to express the viewpoint that consciousness also affects the biology and the genetics. And so I'm in agreement that even some would say some severe psychiatric disorder, that they're not perhaps consciously choosing that, in, you know, consciously choosing that. Still, my point of view is that it would be healthy for that person, or me if I'm that person. There are certainly been plenty of people who've described me as having some severe psychiatric disorders, but we won't talk about that now. So that it would be healthy for that person to adopt, to at least be willing to play with the viewpoint that they are the source of their experience, that they are the source of their severe depression or borderline disorder or schizophrenia, that at least it would be healthy for them to at least be open to the possibility that they're the source of that. Doesn't mean that they're consciously choosing it, because maybe it's become such an ingrained habit. You know, it could be, even like we talk, you know, it's like the term madness, you know, different madness. Well, mad, of course, also means anger. So it could be about, you know, maybe way back in childhood or maybe previous lives, and we can get esoteric about it. But whatever it is, maybe at some point I was so angry and I was trying to control through that anger and I became mad, enraged. It's just one scenario. So whatever the details are, that, yeah, and I've worked with thousands of people over about 30 years in this field, and for me I have deep conviction that for practically everyone it's healthy to at least be, even if they don't believe it, to just at least be willing to play with the possibility that I'm the source of this, and then to look at how am I the source of this, and then what am I going to do about it, and what am I going to do about it might mean that I take my medication. So accepting that I'm the source of it doesn't mean that, oh, I'm not going to acknowledge the biology, I'm not going to acknowledge the genetic influence. It might mean that I acknowledge that and I'm going to take my medication. Or for some, it might mean I'm no longer going to use medication as a crutch, or whatever it means. I'm emphasizing to at least be willing to play with the perspective, wherever you're at, wherever I'm at, that I'm the source of this. And then that can lead to some very powerful questions. I'm not talking about guilt tripping ourselves or being harsh with them. I'm not talking about I'm to blame, I'm at fault. just like, how am I responsible for this? How am I responsible for this? Right? Even if someone does something terrible to me, that I didn't do anything wrong, and people have done terrible things to me and to other people. If I didn't do anything wrong, still, how did I set myself up for that? What is it about my consciousness? What is it about my way of life that created that? And I find that there's so much learning and discovery in that perspective to life.
David, I actually brought up this point in my social policy class last semester when we were talking about how do we deal with the situation of the poor in America, which has been a historically significant problem.
Yes.
And I said, well, maybe instead of just giving out handouts and or limiting the duration of those handouts, you know, and
yes,
we should provide some kind of personal development courses for people who are coming from poverty and difficult circumstances, especially those that have maybe mental illness, because there's research showing that great numbers of poor people who end up in poverty are actually mentally ill. And I'm, you know, just describe kind of this point of view of be, do, have, and how empower them to work on themselves and just look at their situation not from a victim role, but from, you know, a take charge role, that things might be different. They might want to get out of their situation. That point of view was actually very poorly received by my class.
Okay, I'm somehow not real surprised, but I hear. So you took some sort of interpersonal risk by presenting that point of view.
Yeah, and a few people kind of attacked me as coming from the same standpoint as the early American elitists who made the Elizabethan poor laws and you know, the poor laws in America and created this whole system whereby, like, they were looking down condescendingly on these poor people and, oh, they chose this lifestyle and, you know, kind of putting blame.
I appreciate the point of view you presented. Because here's the thing, Marina. I firmly believe in charity. I think that charity is a natural human propensity, and that everyone has this natural propensity to give charity. And so I'm a believer in charity. Not even like it's good. It's just a natural propensity. And at the same time, when we're giving charity as individuals or a community or a government, let's take a look. What message are we sending? Because in, you know, how you described some of the response or reaction you got, I think the tables are quite turned. Because it's like, yeah, we don't want to look down on them. But here's the thing. If I'm giving charity to someone, might they be getting the message from me? Might they be getting the message? No, charity can be through an entitlement program or as a handout, to use the term used. If they're getting the money through those programs, might they be getting the message? We know you can't do it on your own. We know that you're weak and powerless. Now, I'm not saying that all the people and all the programs send that message, but these are essential questions for me in this conversation. So that in giving charity, whether it's through giving taxes that go to entitlement programs or whatever, in giving charity, yeah, am I sending the message, I know you can't do it, you need powerful people like me because you're weak and powerless. So let's take a look at that. So whether charity comes from government, church or business, they can all be wonderful sources to support the needy. What's essentially important for me is that the message we're sending, whether it's through money or food stamps or a personal growth program, the message we're sending is genuinely empowering. And if it's not, then I'm no supporter of it.
That's a very good point. I wish I had brought that up in my class.
Yeah, because oftentimes I don't want to generalize or stereotype, but oftentimes I find that people are like, oh, more programs to help the poor, help the needy, because we're no better than them, we're equal to them. But the whole mentality and consciousness behind the individuals that are running those programs is very disempowering. That, yes, you need us. You can't do it on your own. And so let's really look at the consciousness. And again, whether it's Elizabethan times or colonial times or modern, you know, since modern America, Social Security system, food stamps, welfare, Medicaid, whatever it is, yeah, what's the consciousness? And are we creating a culture of disempowerment? Are we creating a culture of entitlement, a culture of victimhood in the name of helping? If so, then this is doing damage to individuals and society. Oftentimes those very individuals we say that we're helping.
I agree.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments and your intelligent, challenging, stimulating questions and sharing, Marina. Thanks for joining us on the Safa Tov Radio Hour. I appreciate your participation.
Thank you, David.
Thank you, Marina. This is David Wolf, your host of Safa Tov Radio Hour. Safa Tov Radio Hour, your station for self-realization. The number to call to be on the show, 805-285-9749. If you call in, you want to be on the show, press 1. Also, we enthusiastically encourage you to visit the Safa Tov website. That's satvatov.com, where you can get in the library section of the website. There's an abundance of articles about transformative communication, videos, television programs, radio show links, videos, audios, articles to immerse yourself in the wonders of self-realization and transformative communication. This is the Safa Tov Radio Hour, your station for self-realization. The address of the Safa Tov website, safatov.com. I'll spell it for you for newcomers to the Safa Tov community. S as in Stephen, A, T. Thomas, V, Victor, A, T. Thomas, O, V, Victor, E, satvatov.com. I appreciated that conversation with Marina. Such a range of topics, from the micro to the meso to the macro. It really was. From the intrapsychic to the international to the community organizing level?
Yeah, there was another reflection for me as I was listening to the dialogue between you and Marina. And yes, it's about, you know, do we believe that higher self is schizophrenic? Do I believe that my higher self is depressed or bipolar? In my effort of charity, do I feed that higher self of others, or do I feed the lower self and the disempowerment, like you were saying?
Yeah, it's sometimes like amongst mental health practitioners, you could have conversations like, "Oh yeah, my borderline comes in at 4:00." Right, so then the person is not a person. The person is a diagnosis, and so not that categorizations and diagnoses can't be helpful. Not that they can't have their place. At the same time, if they become depersonalizing, that we stop seeing the person, then they can actually do more harm than good. I remember it was an. Because I know Marina's in social work school. In my MSW programs many, many years, decades ago, it was in my psychopathology course. Marina mentioned her psychopathology course. In my psychopathology course, we had a guest lecturer. It was here in North Florida. It was a kind of a prominent a prominent therapist in North Florida, and he came in to give a guest lecture in our psychopathology course, and he held up the DSM. At the time, it was the DSM-4. Now they probably have DSM-4R revised versions, this and that. And it was the DSM-4 had just come out, and he held up the DSM-4 at the beginning of his lecture, and he said, "I believe that this is a great work of fiction." So, and then he went on to say how he sees it a great work of fiction, and he uses it every day because that's how he gets paid. And if you want to be in that system, now I'm happy to say, and I have a psychotherapy license, and I'm a supervisor, qualified supervisor for a psychotherapist, and of course coaching. And so whether it's called coaching, consulting, counseling, you know, whatever I have inside me, whatever experience, skills, caring, compassionate, I endeavor to bring it to the table to enrich people's lives, you know, whatever we call the session, coaching, consulting, psychotherapy. So I'm happy to say that I'm not in that system. I hardly ever use that system of the diagnosis, and I'm glad for that. But for people who want to get reimbursed by insurance, and so I know many who they don't necessarily believe in the system, and he was one of them. He says he uses it every day, maybe 6 times per day, and he gives diagnosis, but he doesn't believe in it. He doesn't believe in it. Great work of fiction. So, yeah. So, again, I appreciate the possible value of categorization systems. At the same time, they can be overdone. They can interfere with really seeing the person. And so the person, where we come from in Sofer Tov Institute, spiritually based personal growth, is that the person intrinsically is this divine being. And, you know, maybe the mind, the intellect, the senses, they're covered, and they're covered to the point where they have a diagnosis of clinical depression or adjustment disorder or whatever it's called. At the same time, we might acknowledge the symptoms, and we might even refer to the diagnosis. At the same time, we want to talk to that spiritual essential being inside. And that spiritual essential being, from my point of view, will do well to view themselves as the source of their experience of life. And in presenting that perspective, sometimes we might not present that perspective because we're just going to be empathically present with their pain and their anger and their rage. Still, I'm talking to that person. While being empathic with their pain, rage, maybe it's hatred, whatever it is, confusion, hurt, shame, while being empathic with it, simultaneously, I'm talking to that pure, empowered spirit soul, and I'm endeavoring to fan that spark and draw it out more and more. And drawing it out might mean being in empathy with how much of a victim they feel sometimes. That doesn't mean I agree. Understanding, empathy, doesn't mean agreement. I might agree sometimes, but just understanding is just a different thing than agreement.
Yeah, it seems to me like I will wonder what are my endeavor for helping if that vision wasn't there. I know, in my coaching, as you know, David, the same thing. I endeavor to see people in their real light, see the empowered being, and then while being very empathic with the suffering, with the confusion, with the stuckness, with whatever is there. And I was wondering, without seeing that part of the empowered being, what will be the meaning of any endeavor at helping? It doesn't register to me what will I be doing without seeing that intrinsic, powerful being.
It would seem pretty empty.
Useless, empty, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've been through that, and I know out of high school, I was an engineering student in college. I studied engineering at Penn State University for 3 years. And then I wasn't satisfied. I was markedly not satisfied. And I switched to psychology because I wanted to to be involved with, let's say, more subtle energies than just matter. And that was nice. At the same time, just like you were saying, Marie, that until I developed an understanding of the person who were counseling, until I developed an understanding of the person as a spiritual entity, as intrinsically filled, as intrinsically possessing joy and knowledge and consciousness and free will and radiance and all of those inherent spiritual qualities. Until I came to that understanding, I was also, I would need to psych myself up to get some motivation to do the psychology, to do the counseling, because what's the point here really? If this person is just a bag of chemicals, and sometimes a mixture of chemicals, oh, let's call that happiness, oh, that's sadness. Right? It seems that's kind of pointless. It's just a mixture of chemicals, and we're attaching different interpretations to it. So you know, until I developed some emergent spiritual understanding of the nature of the self, then I also felt this was pointless, this was useless. And sometimes I would need to push down that feelings of pointlessness and uselessness to do my counseling like that.
It makes sense to me. It makes sense to me. Because, yeah, and also I feel from the point of view of the helper that if we don't have a vision where we are going, then we just get entangled with the people. You know, we just suffer the suffering without any sense of a bigger vision of what's happening and what's at play, really. There is a question here from on Skype. The person is writing on me on Skype. Her name is Brajani. And she said, I would like to hear more about how we can connect with spirit to be beyond the mind and senses.
How? Yeah. How questions. How to do it. You know, that gets at... I'll call the scientific process, the scientific process of bhakti yoga, of transformative communication. And it's just like, you know, scientific means it can be directly experienced. Like science means an experiment. It starts with a hypothesis and experiment. And so just like there's some physics experiments, you know, they can't do them in the daytime. There's too many vibrations from the cars. They need to do them. So some experiments, the set and setting need to be carefully set. They need to be carefully set. And so for one who's, you know, let's say to the extent that we're serious about cultivating this transcendent consciousness, there are different guidelines, different principles that tend to be helpful, and different principles and stuff that tends to be not helpful. So, you know, we've here on the Sofitov Radio Hour, the Sofitov Institute Radio Hour, we've talked about different meditation techniques. I do mantra yoga. We've talked about that. We've talked about the vital importance of association. Just like if someone said, well, how do I become a doctor? Well, one thing is hang out with other doctors, hang out with other med students, right? It's going to be inspiring for you. So whereas if we hang out with people who have no interest in becoming a doctor, it's going to be a lot more difficult. So association. We can look at diet, right? If we tend to eat the result of gross violence, bloody violence, and my goal is to be peaceful and to make the world a peaceful, happy place, and if we eat the results of just gross, bloody, torturous violence, well, it's not going to be so favorable to achieve my goal. So whether it's in our eating habits, our sleeping habits, our reading habits. What do we talk about? What do we listen to? Okay, what sort of sound vibration are we surrounding ourselves with? This is all going to influence. It's all going to influence our spiritual consciousness and the extent to which we're in that transcendent place that is the root of the solution of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. It's the root of the solution of the poor and the rich, that transcendent consciousness. We're going to be empowered to inspire others to also come to that transcendent place that is beyond that sentimental platform that is watering the root of the tree. So every aspect of our life, the spiritual life, it's not like I go to church for 10 minutes or an hour on Sunday. It's a way of life. It's a way of being. Okay? To what extent are we hearing and chanting about the divine? To what extent are we hearing and chanting about mundane, dualistic topics that will drown the senses in this is good, this is bad, on the material platform? So our speaking, our eating, our prayer, our meditation, our association, this all intimately relates to the consciousness we're developing. Intimately relates to the consciousness we're developing. So as far as the how, this question from Rajarani, you know, we can look at any area of life and we could give, you know, we could have many radio shows on how in that particular area of life, whether it's the work we do. And again, whenever I say work, actually my encouragement is for everyone to not work, right? In our Safa Tov coaching, we're helping to coach people so that they never have to work again. And we're not encouraging a lazy, indigent, complacent, indulgent population. Never work again in the sense like, let's connect with our spiritual potency, our spiritual core, so that, as Confucius said, if you love what you do, you'll never have to work. Yeah. So like right here, you could see, Marie, I'm just, this like whole hour, I'm just kind of fooling around. I'm just kind of, this whole hour. So if you call this work, I don't know, you can call this work, but not everyone gets to do this. I'm getting to do this radio show. So whether it's the work we do or the food we eat or who we associate with, Or our habits in any, our habits about financial management, we can dovetail all of them into cultivating transcendent spiritual consciousness. How to do it? How to do it? Well, there are many books and realized people that can give us so much information. Just like if we want to learn math, there are professors and there are books. We want to learn about geography. There are professors, there are books. Let's connect with them.
It seems that at the core there is being conscious, you know, being conscious of what I want and if what I do is supporting what I want. And you gave example of habits, just habits. Habits of what do I cultivate in my life, what do I eat, what I associate with. And then, you know, like in that consciousness also knowing like when I'm really entangled in drama of life and, you know, trying to feel good or feel bad for what's happening around, and when I'm like looking at life as the journey of self-realization, using everything that comes as an opportunity for more growth.
Thank you, Maria. I appreciate that. And a exercise I encourage our listeners to do, even me and you, Marie, and exercises in the next week, identify and change one habit, even if it's apparently trivial or small, one habit, either something you're doing or something you're not doing, something you could change that's going to enhance your spiritual consciousness. One habit, maybe it's in the area of eating or meditation or whatever it is. One habit and make a change. It doesn't need doesn't need to be monumental, could be big or small. One habit and change it in the next week and see what you feel. You've been listening to Soft Dove Radio Hour. Tune in next week. Thank you for joining us. This is David Wolf, your host, the Soft Dove Institute Radio Hour, your station for self-realization.